Still, it passes the bounds of belief that an Earthman would dare come to Solaria, or that Solaria would allow the intrusion. It is even less likely that a Solarian woman, we were half-humans then, but even so, should voluntarily leave this world. But come, let me show you my home. Your home? Said Bliss, looking about. Are we not in your home? Not at all, said Bander. This is an anteroom. It is a viewing room. In it I see my fellow Solarians when I must. Their images appear on that wall, or three-dimensionally in the space before the wall. This room is a public assembly, therefore, and not part of my home. Come with me. It walked on ahead without turning to see if it were followed, but the four robots left their corners, and Treviz knew that if he and his companions did not follow spontaneously, the robots would gently coerce them into doing so. The other two got to their feet, and Treviz whispered lightly to Bliss, "Have you been keeping it talking?" Bliss pressed his hand and nodded.
"Just the same, I wish I knew what its intentions were," she added, with a note of uneasiness in her voice.
49. They followed Bander. The robots remained at a polite distance, but their presence was a constantly felt threat. They were moving through a corridor, and Treviz mumbled low-spiritedly, "There's nothing helpful about Earth on this planet, I'm sure of it. Just another variation on the radioactivity theme." He shrugged. "We'll have to go on to the third set of coordinates." A door opened before them, revealing a small room. Bander said, "Come, half-humans, I want to show you how we live." Treviz whispered, "It gets infantile pleasure out of display. I'd love to knock it down."
"Don't try to compete in childishness," said Bliss.
Bander ushered all three into the room. One of the robots followed as well. Bander gestured the other robots away and entered itself. The door closed behind it. "It's an elevator," said Pellerat, with a pleased air of discovery.
"So it is," said Bander. "Once we went underground, we never truly emerged, nor would we want to, though I find it pleasant to feel the sunlight on occasion. I dislike clouds or night in the open, however. That gives one the sensation of being underground without truly being underground, if you know what I mean. That is cognitive dissonance after a fashion, and I find it very unpleasant."
"Earth built underground," said Pellerat. "The caves of steel they call their cities. And Trantor built underground, too, even more extensively, in the old imperial days. And Camporeon builds underground right now. It is a common tendency when you come to think of it."
"Half-humans swarming underground, and we living underground in isolated splendor are two widely different things," said Bander.
Treviz said, "On Terminus, dwelling places are on the surface."
"And exposed to the weather," said Bander. "Very primitive."
The elevator, after the initial feeling of lower gravity that had given away its nature to Pellerat, gave no sensation of motion whatsoever. Treviz was wondering how far down it would penetrate when there was a brief feeling of higher gravity and the door opened. Before them was a large and elaborately furnished room. It was dimly lit, though the source of the light was not apparent. It almost seemed as though the air itself were faintly luminous. Bander pointed its finger, and where it pointed, the light grew a bit more intense. It pointed it elsewhere, and the same thing happened.
It placed its left hand on a stubby rod to one side of the doorway, and with its right hand made an expansive circular gesture, so that the whole room lit up as though it were in sunlight, but with no sensation of heat. Trevise grimaced and said half aloud, "The man's a charlatan." Bander said sharply, "Not the man, but the Solarian. I'm not sure what the word charlatan means, but if I catch the tone of voice, it is opprobrious." Trevise said, "It means one who is not genuine, who arranges effects to make what is done seem more impressive than it really is." Bander said, "I admit that I love the dramatic, but what I have shown you is not an effect. It is real." It tapped the rod on which its left hand was resting. "This heat-conducting rod extends several kilometers downward, and there are similar rods in many convenient places throughout my estate. I know there are similar rods on other estates. These rods increase the rate at which heat leaves Solaria's lower regions for the surface and eases its conversion into work. I do not need the gestures of the hand to produce the light, but it does lend an air of drama, or perhaps, as you point out, a slight touch of the not genuine. I enjoy that sort of thing." Bliss said, "Do you have much opportunity to experience the pleasure of such little dramatic touches?" "No," said Bander, shaking its head. "My robots are not impressed with such things, nor would my fellow Solarians be. This unusual chance of meeting half-humans and displaying for them is most amusing." Pellerat said, "The light in this room shone dimly when we entered. Does it shine dimly at all times?" "Yes, a small drain of power, like keeping the robots working. My entire estate is always running, and those parts of it not engaged in active labor are idling."
"And you supply the power constantly for all this vast estate?"
"The sun and the planet's core supply the power. I am merely the conduit. Nor is all the estate productive. I keep most of it as wilderness and well stocked with a variety of animal life. First, because that protects my boundaries, and second, because I find aesthetic value in it. In fact, my fields and factories are small. They need only supply my own needs, plus some specialties to exchange for those of others. I have robots, for instance, that can manufacture and install the heat-conducting rods at need. Many Solarians depend upon me for that."
"And your home?" asked Trevise. "How large is that?"
It must have been the right question to ask, for Bander beamed.
"Very large. One of the largest on the planet, I believe. It goes on for kilometers in every direction. I have as many robots caring for my home underground as I have in all the thousands of square kilometers of surface."
"You don't live in all of it, surely," said Pellerat.
"It might conceivably be that there are chambers I have never entered, but what of that?" said Bander. "The robots keep every room clean, well ventilated, and in order. But come, step out here." They emerged through a door that was not the one through which they had entered, and found themselves in another corridor. Before them was a little topless ground car that ran on tracks. Bander motioned them into it, and one by one they clambered aboard. There was not quite room for all four plus the robot, but Pellerat and Bliss squeezed together tightly to allow room for Trevise. Bander sat in the front with an air of easy comfort, the robot at its side. and the car moved along with no sign of overt manipulation of controls other than Bander's smooth hand motions now and then.
"This is a car-shaped robot, actually," said Bander, with an air of negligent indifference.
They progressed at a stately pace, very smoothly past doors that opened as they approached and closed as they receded. The decorations in each were of widely different kinds, as though robots had been ordered to devise combinations at random. Ahead of them, the corridor was gloomy, and behind them as well. At whatever point they actually found themselves, however, they were in the equivalent of cool sunlight. The rooms, too, would light as the doors opened. And each time, Bander moved his hand slowly and gracefully. There seemed no end to the journey. Now and then, they found themselves curving in a way that made it plain that the underground mansion spread out in two dimensions. No, three, thought Trevise at one point, as they moved steadily down a shallow declivity. Wherever they went, there were robots, by the dozens, scores, hundreds, engaged in unhurried work whose nature Trevise could not easily divine. They passed the open door of one large room, in which rows of robots were bent quietly over desks. Pellerat asked, "What are they doing, Bander?"
"Bookkeeping," said Bander. "Keeping statistical records, financial accounts, and all sorts of things that, I am very glad to say, I don't have to bother with. This isn't just an idle estate. About a quarter of its growing area is given over to orchards. An additional tenth are grain fields. But it's the orchards that are really my pride. We grow the best fruit in the world, and grow them in the largest number of varieties, too. A Bander peach is the peach on Solaria. Hardly anyone else even bothers to grow peaches. We have 27 varieties of apples and so on. The robots could give you full information."
"What do you do with all the fruit?" asked Trevise. "You can't eat it all yourself."
"I wouldn't dream of it. I'm only moderately fond of fruit. It's traded to the other estates."
"Traded for what?"
"Mineral material, mostly. I have no mines worth mentioning on my estates. Then, too, I trade for whatever is required to maintain a healthy ecological balance. I have a very large variety of plant and animal life on the estate."
"The robots take care of all that, I suppose," said Trevise.
"They do, and very well, too."
"All for one Solarian."
"All for the estate and its ecological standards. I happen to be the only Solarian who visits the various parts of the estate, when I choose, but that is part of my absolute freedom."
Pellerat said, "I suppose the other Solarians, also maintain a local ecological balance, and have marshlands, perhaps, or mountainous areas, or seafront estates."
Bander said, "I suppose so. Such things occupy us in the conferences that world affairs sometimes make necessary."
"How often do you have to get together?" asked Trevise. They were going through a rather narrow passageway, quite long, and with no rooms on either side. Trevise guessed that it might have been built through an area that did not easily allow anything wider to be constructed, so that it served as a connecting link between two wings that could each spread out more widely.
"Too often. It's a rare month when I don't have to pass some time in conference with one of the committees I am a member of. Still, although I may not have mountains or marshlands on my estate, my orchards, my fish ponds, and my botanical gardens are the best in the world."
Pellerat said, But, my dear fellow, I mean Bander, I would assume you have never left your estate and visited those of others.
Certainly not, said Bander, with an air of outrage.
I said I assumed that, said Pellerat mildly. But in that case, how can you be certain that yours are best, never having investigated or even seen the others?
Because, said Bander, I can tell from the demand for my products in interestate trade.
Treville said, What about manufacturing?
Bander said, There are estates where they manufacture tools and machinery. As I said, on my estate we make the heat-conducting rods, but those are rather simple.
And robots?
Robots are manufactured here and there. Throughout history, Solaria has led all the galaxy in the cleverness and subtlety of robot design.
Today also, I imagine, said Treviz, carefully having the intonation make the remark a statement and not a question.
Bander said, Today? With whom is there to compete today? Only Solaria makes robots nowadays. Your worlds do not, if I interpret what I hear on the hyperwave correctly.
But the other spacer worlds?
I told you, they no longer exist.
At all?
I don't think there is a spacer alive anywhere but on Solaria.
Then is there no one who knows the location of Earth?
Why would anyone want to know the location of Earth?
Pellerat broke in.
I want to know. It's my field of study.
Then, said Bander, you will have to study something else. I know nothing about the location of Earth, nor have I heard of anyone who ever did, nor do I care a sliver of robot metal about the matter.
The car came to a halt, and for a moment Treviz thought that Bander was offended. The halt was a smooth one, however, and Bander, getting out of the car, looked its usual amused self as it motioned the others to get out also. The lighting in the room they entered was subdued, even after Bander had brightened it with a gesture. It opened into a side corridor, on both sides of which were smaller rooms. In each one of the smaller rooms was one or two ornate vases, sometimes flanked by objects that might have been film projectors.
What is all this, Bander? Asked Treviz.
Bander said, The ancestral death chambers, Treviz.
50. Pellerat looked about with interest.
I suppose you have the ashes of your ancestors interred here?
If you mean by interred, said Bander, buried in the ground, you are not quite right. We may be underground, but this is my mansion, and the ashes are in it, as we are right now. In our own language, we say that the ashes are in-housed. It hesitated, then said, House is an archaic word for mansion.
Treviz looked about him perfunctorily. And these are all your ancestors? How many?
Nearly 100, said Bander, making no effort to hide the pride in its voice.
94, to be exact. Of course, the earliest are not true Solarians, not in the present sense of the word. They were half-people, masculine and feminine. Such half-ancestors were placed in adjoining urns by their immediate descendants. I don't go into those rooms, of course. It's rather chemiferous. At least that's the Solarian word for it, but I don't know your galactic equivalent. You may not have one.
And the films? Asked Bliss. I take it those are film projectors.
Diaries, said Bander. The history of their lives.
scenes of themselves in their favorite parts of the estate. It means they do not die in every sense. Part of them remains, and it is part of my freedom that I can join them whenever I choose. I can watch this bit of film or that as I please. But not into the chamiferous ones.
Bander's eyes slithered away.
No, it admitted. But then we all have that as part of the ancestry. It is a common wretchedness.
Common? Then other Salarians also have these death chambers? Asked Trevise.
Oh, yes, we all do. But mine is the best, the most elaborate, the most perfectly preserved.
Trevise said, Do you have your own death chamber already prepared?
Certainly. It is completely constructed and appointed. That was done as my first duty when I inherited the estate. And when I am laid to ash, to be poetic, my successor will go about the construction of its own as its first duty.
And do you have a successor?
I will have when the time comes. There is as yet ample scope for life. When I must leave, there will be an adult successor, ripe enough to enjoy the estate and well-lobed for power transduction.
It will be your offspring, I imagine.
Oh, yes.
But what if, said Trevise, something untoward takes place? I presume accidents and misfortunes take place even on Salaria. What happens if a Salarian is laid to ash prematurely, and it has no successor to take its place, or at least not one who is ripe enough to enjoy the estate?
That rarely happens. In my line of ancestors, that happened only once. When it does, however, one need only remember that there are other successors waiting for other estates. Some of those are old enough to inherit, and yet have parents who are young enough to produce a second descendant, and to live on till that second descendant is ripe enough for the succession. One of these old young successors, as they are called, would be assigned to the succession of my estate.
Who does the assigning?
We have a ruling board that has this as one of its few functions, the assignment of a successor, in case of premature ashing. It is all done by holovision, of course.
Pellerat said, But see here, if Salarians never see each other, how would anyone know that some Salarian somewhere has unexpectedly, or expectedly for that matter, been laid to ash?
Bander said, When one of us is laid to ash, all power at the estate ceases. If no successor takes over at once, the abnormal situation is eventually noticed and corrective measures are taken. I assure you that our social system works smoothly.
Trevise said, Would it be possible to view some of these films you have here?
Bander froze. Then it said, It is only your ignorance that excuses you. What you have said is crude and obscene.
I apologize for that, said Trevise. I do not wish to intrude on you, but we've already explained that we are very interested in obtaining information on Earth. It occurs to me that the earliest films you have would date back to a time before Earth was radioactive. Earth might therefore be mentioned. There might be details given about it. We certainly do not wish to intrude on your privacy, but would there be any way in which you yourself could explore those films, or have a robot do so, perhaps, and then allow any relevant information to be passed on to us?
Of course, if you can respect our motives, and understand that we will try our best to respect your feelings in return, you might allow us to do the viewing ourselves.
Bander said frigidly,
I imagine you have no way of knowing that you are becoming more and more offensive. However, we can end all this at once, for I can tell you that there are no films accompanying my early half-human ancestors.
None? Trevise's disappointment was heartfelt.
They existed once, but even you can imagine what might have been on them. Two half-humans showing interest in each other, or even...
Bander cleared its throat and said, with an effort,
interacting. Naturally, all half-human films were destroyed many generations ago.
What about the records of other Solarians?
All destroyed.
Can you be sure?
It would be mad not to destroy them.
It might be that some Solarians were mad, or sentimental, or forgetful. We presume you will not object to directing us to neighboring estates.
Bander looked at Trevise in surprise. Do you suppose others will be as tolerant of you as I have been?
Why not, Bander?
You'll find they won't be.
It's a chance we'll have to take.
No, Trevise. No, any of you. Listen to me.
There were robots in the background, and Bander was frowning.
What is it, Bander? Said Trevise, suddenly uneasy.
Bander said, I have enjoyed speaking to all of you and observing you in all your strangeness. It was a unique experience which I have been delighted with, but I cannot record it in my diary nor memorialize it in film.
Why not?
My speaking to you, my listening to you, my bringing you into my mansion, my bringing you here into the ancestral death chambers, are shameful acts.
We are not Solarians. We matter to you as little as these robots do, do we not?
I excuse the matter to myself in that way. It may not serve as an excuse to others.
What do you care? You have absolute liberty to do as you choose, don't you?
Even as we are, freedom is not truly absolute. If I were the only Solarian on the planet, I could do even shameful things in absolute freedom. But there are other Solarians on the planet, and because of that, ideal freedom, though approached, is not actually reached. There are 1,200 Solarians on the planet who would despise me if they knew what I had done.
There is no reason they need know about it.
That is true. I have been aware of that since you've arrived. I've been aware of it all this time that I've been amusing myself with you. The others must not find out.
Pellerat said, If that means you fear complications as a result of our visits to other estates in search of information about Earth, why, naturally, we will mention nothing of having visited you first. That is clearly understood.
Bander shook its head.
I have taken enough chances. I will not speak of this, of course. My robots will not speak of this, and will even be instructed not to remember it. Your ship will be taken underground and explored for what information it can give us.
Wait, said Trevise. How long do you suppose we can wait here while you inspect our ship?
That is impossible.
Not at all impossible, for you will have nothing to say about it.
I am sorry. I would like to speak to you longer, and to discuss many other things with you. But, you see, the matter grows more dangerous.
No, it does not, said Trevise emphatically.
Yes, it does, little half-human. I'm afraid the time has come when I must do what my ancestors would have done at once. I must kill you, all three.
Chapter 12. To the Surface. 51. Trevise turned his head at once to look at Bliss. Her face was expressionless but taut, and her eyes were fixed on Bander with an intensity that made her seem oblivious to all else. Pellerat's eyes were wide, disbelieving. Trevise, not knowing what Bliss would or could do, struggled to fight down an overwhelming sense of loss. Not so much at the thought of dying, as of dying without knowing where Earth was, without knowing why he had chosen Gaia as humanity's future. He had to play for time. He said, striving to keep his voice steady and his words clear, "You have shown yourself a courteous and gentle Solarian, Bander. You have not grown angry at our intrusion into your world. You have been kind enough to show us over your estate and mansion, and you have answered our questions. It would suit your character better to allow us to leave now. No one need ever know we were on this world, and we would have no cause to return. We arrived in all innocence, seeking merely information." "What you say is so," said Bander lightly, "and so far I have given you life. Your lives were forfeit the instant you entered our atmosphere. What I might have done, and should have done, on making close contact with you, would be to have killed you at once. I should then have ordered the appropriate robot to dissect your bodies for what information on outworlders that might yield me. I have not done that. I have pampered my own curiosity and given in to my own easygoing nature. But it is enough. I can do it no longer. I have, in fact, already compromised the safety of Solaria. For if, through some weakness, I were to let myself be persuaded to let you go, others of your kind would surely follow, however much you might promise that they would not. There is, however, at least this. Your death will be painless. I will merely heat your brains mildly and drive them into inactivation. You will experience no pain. Life will merely cease. Eventually, when dissection and study are over, I will convert you to ashes in an intense flash of heat, and all will be over." Trevise said, "If we must die, then I cannot argue against a quick and painless death. But why must we die at all, having given no offense?"
"Your arrival was an offense."
"Not on any rational ground, since we could not know it was an offense."
"Society defines what constitutes an offense. To you, it may seem irrational and arbitrary, but to us it is not. And this is our world on which we have the full right to say that in this and that, you have done wrong and deserve to die."
Bander smiled as though it were merely making pleasant conversation and went on. "Nor have you any right to complain on the ground of your own superior virtue. You have a blaster which uses a beam of microwaves to induce intense killing heat. It does what I intend to do, but it does it, I am sure, much more crudely and painfully. You would have no hesitation in using it on me right now, had I not drained its energy. And if I were to be so foolish as to allow you the freedom of movement, that would enable you to remove the weapon from its holster."
Trevise said despairingly, afraid even to glance again at Bliss, lest Bander's attention be diverted to her, "I ask you, as an act of mercy, not to do this." Bander said, turning suddenly grim, "I must first be merciful to myself and to my world, and to do that, you must die."
He raised his hand, and instantly darkness descended upon Trevise. 52. For a moment, Trevise felt the darkness choking him, and thought wildly, "Is this death?" And as though his thoughts had given rise to an echo, he heard a whispered, "Is this death?" It was Pellerat's voice. Trevise tried to whisper, and found he could. "Why ask?" he said, with a sense of vast relief. "The mere fact that you can ask shows it is not death. There are old legends that there is life after death." "Nonsense," muttered Trevise. "Bliss? Are you here, Bliss?" There was no answer to that. Again Pellerat echoed, "Bliss? Bliss? What happened, Golan?" Trevise said, "Bander must be dead. He would in that case be unable to supply the power for his estate. The lights would go out." "But how could... You mean Bliss did it?" "I suppose so. I hope she did not come to harm in the process." He was on his hands and knees, crawling about in the total darkness of the underground, if one did not count the occasional sub-visible flashing of a radioactive atom breaking down in the walls. Then his hand came on something warm and soft. He felt along it and recognized a leg, which he seized. It was clearly too small to be Bander's. "Bliss?" The leg kicked out, forcing Trevise to let go. He said, "Bliss, say something." "I am alive," came Bliss's voice, curiously distorted. Trevise said, "But are you well?"
"No."
And with that, light returned to their surroundings, weakly. The walls gleamed faintly, brightening and dimming erratically. Bander lay crumpled in a shadowy heap. At its side, holding its head, was Bliss. She looked up at Trevise and Pellerat.
"The Solarian is dead," she said,
and her cheeks glistened with tears in the weak light. Trevise was dumbfounded.
"Why are you crying?" "Should I not cry at having killed a living thing of thought and intelligence? That was not my intention."
Trevise leaned down to help her to her feet, but she pushed him away. Pellerat knelt in his turn, saying softly,
"Please, Bliss, even you can't bring it back to life. Tell us what happened."
She allowed herself to be pulled upward and said dully,
"Gaia can do what Bander could do. Gaia can make use of the unevenly distributed energy of the universe and translate it into chosen work by mental power alone."
"I knew that," said Trevise, attempting to be soothing without quite knowing how to go about it. "I remember well our meeting in space when you, or Gaia, rather, held our spaceship captive. I thought of that when Bander held me captive after it had taken my weapons. It held you captive, too, but I was confident you could have broken free if you had wished."
"No, I would have failed if I had tried. When your ship was in Gaia's grip," she said sadly, "I and Gaia were truly one. Now there is a hyperspatial separation that limits Gaia's efficiency. Besides, Gaia does what it does by the sheer power of massed brains. Even so, all those brains together lack the transducer lobes this one Solarian has. We cannot make use of energy as delicately, as efficiently, as tirelessly as he could. You see that I cannot make the lights gleam more brightly, and I don't know how long I can make them gleam at all before tiring. Bander could supply the power for an entire vast estate, even when it was sleeping."
"But you stopped it," said Trevise.
"Because it didn't suspect my powers,"
said Bliss, and because I did nothing that would give it evidence of them. It was therefore without suspicion of me, and gave me none of its attention. It concentrated entirely on you, Trevise, because it was you who bore the weapons. Again, how well it has served that you armed yourself. And I had to wait my chance to stop Bander with one quick and unexpected blow. When it was on the point of killing us, when its whole mind was concentrated on that and on you, I was able to strike. And it worked beautifully. How can you say something so cruel, Trevise? It was only my intention to stop it. I merely wished to block its use of its transducer. In the moment of surprise, when it tried to blast us and found it could not, but found instead that the very illumination about us was fading into darkness, I would tighten my grip and send it into a prolonged normal sleep and release the transducer. The power would then remain on, and we could get out of this mansion, into our ship, and leave the planet. I hoped to so arrange things that, when Bander finally woke, it would have forgotten all that had happened from the instant of its sighting us. Gaia has no desire to kill in order to accomplish what can be brought about without killing.
What went wrong, Bliss? Said Pallarat softly.
I had never encountered any such thing as those transducer lobes, and I lacked any time to work with them and learn about them. I merely struck out forcefully with my blocking maneuver, and apparently it didn't work correctly. It was not the entry of energy into the lobes that was blocked, but the exit of that energy. Energy is always pouring into those lobes at a reckless rate, but ordinarily the brain safeguards itself by pouring out that energy just as quickly. Once I blocked the exit, however, energy piled up within the lobes at once, and in a tiny fraction of a second, the temperature had risen to the point where the brain protein inactivated explosively, and it was dead. The lights went out, and I removed my block immediately, but, of course, it was too late.
I don't see that you could have done anything other than that which you did, dear, said Pallarat.
Of what comfort is that, considering that I have killed?
Bander was on the point of killing us, said Trevise.
That was cause for stopping it, not for killing it.
Trevise hesitated. He did not wish to show the impatience he felt, for he was unwilling to offend or further upset Bliss, who was, after all, their only defense against a supremely hostile world. He said, Bliss, it is time to look beyond Bander's death. Because it is dead, all power on the estate is blanked out. This will be noticed sooner or later, probably sooner, by other Solarians. They will be forced to investigate. I don't think you will be able to hold off the perhaps combined attack of several. And as you have admitted yourself, you won't be able to supply for very long the limited power you are managing to supply now. It is important, therefore, that we get back to the surface and to our ship without delay.
But Golan, said Pallarat, how do we do that? We came for many kilometers along a winding path. I imagine it's quite a maze down here, and for myself, I haven't the faintest idea of where to go to reach the surface. I've always had a poor sense of direction.
Trevise, looking about, realized that Pallarat was correct. He said, I imagine there are many openings to the surface, and we needn't find the one we entered.